Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizo An Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
Dharma, incomparable, profound, minutely subtle, is rarely met with, even in hundreds, thousands, millions of eons. We can see this, listen to this, accept and hold this. May we completely understand and actualize this Tathagata's true meaning. Welcome everyone, once again. It's good to see you all here this evening. Our practice is only amplified when we're in community like this, and I truly appreciate you all being here, both present here in the Zendo and for you in the virtual space there. So tonight I'll begin speaking about impermanence, but only as a jumping off point to explore what it means to be a bodhisattva. Of course, we all know what impermanence means in the conventional sense of the word. We intuitively know that it means that nothing lasts forever, that like everything else, we have a beginning and an end. But if we really appreciated it, this notion of impermanence, not just a notion, but this reality, then we would live our lives a bit differently. If we truly understood and actualized what impermanence means in our actual lives, it mandates that our time is sacred and unique in each moment that arises, and that it offers an opportunity for us to orient ourselves in the direction of love. So Buddhism offers us a number of practices for orienting ourselves to love, inspired by the realization of impermanence. The six paramitas are guidelines or practices to do exactly that. The first four are common to all the major religions: generosity, patience, ethical behavior, and joyful effort. While the last two, meditation and understanding, have a more prominent role in Buddhist practice. Being aware of the truth of impermanence means fidelity to these six paramitas. For when we grasp onto something as permanent, we limit our range of actions and perspectives, and we neglect what we truly are. We can't be anything but truly generous when we recognize this reality. We can't be impatient or act unethically. When we know we are moving together with one heart, when we know our efforts are beneficial to all beings, we can't act without joy. My neighbor, a few doors down from me, has a wooded lot of a couple of acres. About a week ago, I heard the sound of chainsaws for the better part of 2 days, in which he cut and stacked logs, which he systematically cleared from his property. When later that day I saw the stack of logs, my heart sank. A beautiful yard of tall pines and oaks had been turned into a lot full of stumps. About a week later, during my morning sitting, I heard the sound of the logs being loaded onto a steel platform of a flatbed trailer. And in my upright seated posture in Zazen, I suddenly imagined myself as a tall living tree. The tripod of my knees and sit bones, the base and roots of that tree. My torso, the tall trunk, my arms, branches, my head, the crown. Breathing in the atmosphere, converting it into my own body, making it me. Breathing out the fuel for other forms of life, no longer mine, no longer me. Like the trees, we both respond to the wind that bends and to the gravity that anchors us. Like those trees, our bodies are one day harvested and returned to the earth. These thoughts arise unbidden, this body just a conduit for them. They do not belong to me, just as the leaves that fall in autumn are no longer part of the tree. I've recently had the good fortune of attending a couple of musical events locally, and I found myself with tears leaking from my eyes and wetting my cheeks all through the first 15 minutes or so of both performances. The two were completely different in nature, one of Irish traditional music, and the other a set of folk and rock anthems from the 60s and 70s, joyfully performed. And it led me to wonder why I had such a strong emotional response. In the first case, I can justify it as remembering my Irish grandfather playing a small accordion and singing songs from his youth. And in the second case, I could see the connection to my teen years, full of rebellion and righteous response to the tenor of the times. I purchased a CD of the Irish band that I saw, and in the liner notes was a quote, "Your hearts are like your mountains in the homes of Donegal." And I felt that this was a beautiful metaphor, this idea of hearts as mountains, those manifestations of strength and resilience. The birthplace of streams standing in the weather unguarded, receiving whatever the skies, whatever the winds rain down upon them. The habitat of wild things, mountain goats, condors, foxes, and marmots. Our mountain hearts endure, steady, wild, and beautiful, braving storms and floods and the heat of fires and relentless summers. Whether cooked by angry summers or buried in snowy winters, our mountain hearts persist. So I began my sharing with you this evening with the phenomenon of impermanence, also known as one of the three marks of existence. In fact, you could say a key point of Zen Buddhist practice is the recognition that there is nothing permanent in our mortal existence here on earth. It is a baked-in fact, the whole definition of being mortal. And the only answer or the only strategy that makes any sense is to handle our moment-to-moment existence with care, with loving kindness, with generosity and patience and joy. These are the teachings of the Paramitas, also known as the Gone Beyonds or Perfections. And so let's begin with a brief summary of the Paramitas from Zen teacher Norman Fisher's book, The World Could Be Otherwise. It's a wonderful examination of the Paramitas and role of imagination in our lives. Mahayana Buddhists transformed the idea of the Bodhisattva as the singular Buddha Shakyamuni into the Bodhisattva ideal of all beings operating with boundless love and care for the world. These ideals are like the horizon, a place or direction we can walk towards, but not a final endpoint. We walk with each step, content to never arrive. The path itself is the goal. This is the paradox of the six perfections or paramitas. The six perfections are expansive, endlessly imaginative practices, yet they are at the same time down to earth. They are pathways for the development of character, ways we can improve as human beings functioning in the world as it is. Taken as a whole, they define a spirit and a way of life. The six perfections are generosity, ethical conduct, patience, joyful effort, meditation, and understanding. The perfection of generosity, opening our hearts to ourselves, others, and to the abundance of life. The perfection of ethical conduct, paying attention to our thoughts, words, and deeds, turning them away from self-centeredness and toward love and the benefit of others. The perfection of patience, fully facing difficulties and transforming them into the path. The perfection of joyful effort, rousing ourselves to hopefulness and joy so that we can keep our practice commitments with a bright spirit. The perfection of meditation, focused, regular sitting and walking practice to refresh and slow down our heart and minds so that our days and nights can be firm and calm. The perfection of understanding, recognizing that nothing is as we think it is, that there is no separation, no tragedy, that nothing is fixed or solid, that there is only love and endless hopefulness beyond and within what happens and doesn't happen. The perfection of understanding pervades the other five perfections. It is the great gift of Mahayana Buddhist thought, the source and fruit of imagination. These six practices define the path of the Bodhisattva, the imaginative hero of the Mahayana Buddhist path. To contemplate and practice them is a lifetime's project, one we will never complete. The more we practice them in this crazy world, the more we will see how our ordinary human life, with all its pressures and difficulties, can also be a heroic and passionate spiritual journey. Understanding and love are possible. Note that Fisher uses the word imaginative, not imaginary. In other words, creative, not illusory. Imagination is the necessary and skillful means that we use to lay out the path before us, because the paramitas encompass a whole world of practices and approaches. I will focus tonight on just the paramita of joyful effort. This is one that I sometimes struggle with, because every time that my discriminating mind grabs hold of a task that I feel obligated to complete, especially one that I imagine to be unpleasant or demanding, or one prompting me to expend energy that I don't think I can spare, I lose any hope of performing that activity in a joyful spirit. The perfection of joyful effort is originally known as Virya Paramita, whose Sanskrit root conjures virility, energy, or zest. Bodhisattvas require tons of energy to do what they do, and the only way to maintain such a commitment is through love for what you do. Although some traditional texts portray bodhisattvas as heroes who encounter dragon-like beings and evil kings, bodhisattvas actually do battle with the internal foes of selfishness and self-indulgence. They overcome these obstacles with patience and love for all beings, and with each victory they go forth again with joyful effort. The Japanese adage of falling off the horse seven times, getting up eight, is apt here. We face our lives with energetic vision directed toward what is beneficial for all. And its practice reinforces and reinvigorates us to keep going and to do more. So how much effort does it take to be lazy? Laziness is often manifested as overwork, discouragement, self-doubt, or situational depression. The antidote? Joyful effort. By recognizing our precious nature, our struggles with our darker impulses can be alleviated. We can choose not to validate them. If we accept that all life is sacred, how can yours not be? All of us are worthy of respect and love. The causes and conditions that lead to discouragement are only temporary, impermanent. The satisfaction of a life well lived can only come through joyful effort. When negative states, mind states, do arise, we persist and handle them with patience, forgiveness, and even a little humor. If we can exert effort for its own sake, without tying it to any goal or reward, it becomes effortless. The effort itself becomes the goal, joyful in its performance. Bodhisattvas vow to fulfill impossible goals, goals of happiness, awakening, love, and respect for all beings, bar none. On the other hand, with aspirations so large, they must take time to recharge on occasion. They may need to reconsider their approach or to make adjustments, but they always resume with joyful effort at the appropriate time. Their guiding light remains aspiration and vow. It is not to be seen as effort per se, but as a process of sharing life within the causes and conditions of the moment. Energy appears where and when it is needed and flows through you when you allow it. We must not forget that self-care and self-compassion are also folded into the path of joyful effort. Desire for the well-being of others is not the only expression of care that must be considered. As our Roshi would often say, you cannot give what you don't have. And so we act prudently to care for our individual physical, emotional, and mental health as well. Our individual and collective survival depends on this. Caring for the body as it is, exerting it appropriately as one can, is the practice of joyful effort. The vows of the Bodhisattva are not the same as promises that we work on until we accomplish them. Instead, they express the intention to move toward a horizon that will never be met, certainly not in this lifetime. They represent a commitment that only deepens through heartfelt practice. Fisher calls the taking of vows soul surgery. You remove commitment to self-concern and insert vow in its place. The surgery doesn't eliminate your self-centeredness, but you see that the path of your life is to free yourself from the bondage of the small self, widening your vision and care to include all beings. Bodhisattvas act with integrity. That is, you proceed in all actions with undivided attention and devotion. When we fail, disappoint, or engage in contradictory behavior, we don't sink into recrimination. We integrate the experience, remaining open to learning from it. Our cultural training and even our biology rarely operate this way. By default, we've learned that we must protect our individual interests and everything we perceive as ours, as separate entities. But it is clear that when we can act from the place of community, each offering what one's talents can provide to the whole, that the greater good is served. A bodhisattva's actions are courageous in the sense that they project effort for the benefit of all, despite doubt or personal fears. They realize that the tendency to self-protect keeps us small, and that we can only be truly comfortable in our own skin when we stretch ourselves to act out of concern for the wider world. The path of joyful effort leads to being hopeful, not in the way of hoping for a specific outcome, but in knowing that the next moment is always unpredictable. Even though future moments may bring good or bad outcomes, we know we can apply joyful effort to make an impact on whichever happens to manifest. This state of affairs is actually encouraging. We all fail to meet our aspirations at times, but our practice is to rise up to these ideals, these perfections, no matter how many times we fail. We don't excuse our disappointments, but we take them in stride as learning opportunities. This is also joyful effort, not allowing our shortcomings to dominate our internal conversation or to override our better judgment. To see our internal dynamics as weather passing over our mountain hearts, and seeing to it that all our actions are performed with a sense of inclusion for the benefit of all. Zen Master Dogen calls this identity action, performing all of our physical activities with fully alive attention. When you prepare a meal, you feed all of humanity. When you vacuum the rug, you remove the dust from the air for all to breathe fresh. Practicing like this, you build joy in your work for yourself, and you inspire others. So we practice for and with others, never just with ourselves in mind. There was a classic work of Mahayana Buddhism called 37 Practices of a Bodhisattva, where it is stated that to help all beings, pour your energy into practice. It is the source of all abilities. This is the practice of a bodhisattva. Perfecting joyful effort, all the other paramitas are fulfilled, and creative energy flows through you naturally. On a recent trip to Nepal to provide desperately needed medical care to the people in its remote villages, Roshi Joan Halifax shared that the kind of hope I have is not a small hope. It is actually about the possibility for a future that is characterized by virtue and love. I feel really grateful to be here year after year, and I don't know what will happen next year. Maybe I won't even be alive. Maybe my heart can't take another mountain. But I feel like we have together made a mountain out of our human hearts, and we've come into some kind of awakening, maybe just transitory, but seeing how we can be really decent with each other and really unselfish and practice generosity just naturally. So let's all take up the path of the perfection of joyful effort for the sake of all beings.